Mentioned over the past week or so that I've just come back from 2 weeks in Camp Simcha, and being the rabbi in Camp Simcha is an exhilarating experience on many levels, but one of the very difficult things that we need to do there is to deal with all of the difficult shilas that come up. So what I'd like to share with you tonight is a general overview of the laws of Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, and perhaps we'll discuss some of the situations that came up and how it plays into the halachic system and what the Shulchan Aruch says about some of the issues that we face when we deal with very complicated medical issues, especially when it comes to Shabbos. We begin with the Gemara Maseches Yuma, where the Gemara has a discussion about how do we know that Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Shabbos? How do we know that for the sake of saving someone's life, you're allowed to violate the laws of Shabbos? And the Gemara goes through a lengthy discussion there. It is not exactly clear what the real source in the Torah is. And the Gemara comes to the conclusion from the Pasuk V'chai Bahem, we learn from that V'lo She'yamos Bahem. We have an obligation to live by the laws of the Torah. We're not supposed to die because of the laws of the Torah, and therefore we assume that V'chai Bahem would dictate that even if it means you have to be Mechal Shabbos, that is what a person is supposed to do, and therefore we assume one is allowed to be involved in those activities on Shabbos. Now the Mefarshim ask a very obvious question. Why do you even need to ask the question in the first place? We all know Avodah Zarah, Gilei Arayos, and Shvichas Damim are the only three Averis in the Torah that one is not allowed to violate, even when my life depends on it. So why would I have assumed that when it comes to the laws of Shabbos, I should give up my life, and I need a Pasuk to come and tell me that, no, you should violate the laws of Shabbos instead of giving up your life? Why would Shabbos be any different from any other Avera or Mitzvah in the Torah, which one would not be expected to give up their life, and so much so that many Rishonim say you're not even allowed to volunteer to give up your life for one of the Averis in the Torah outside of those three? So what is the understanding of that Gemara in the first place? And many explain the reason why the Gemara has the discussion at all is because we assume that a Mechal Shabbos is Dino Ka'akum. The Gemara assumes that somebody who's a Mechal Shabbos takes on a status in some way as a non-kosher. Now, that doesn't mean he's allowed to intermarry, it doesn't mean he's allowed to eat non-kosher food, but it means with regard to certain halachas, we assume that that person is considered to be of the status of a non-Jew. We can't count into a minion and other things, and therefore because of that we would assume that maybe Shabbos should be on an elevated status. Maybe we should say there are three averus you're not allowed to violate if it comes to a person's life depending on it. Avodah Zarah, Gilei Arayos, and Shvichas Damim, plus a fourth, which is Chilul Shabbos. Maybe I would have said that because HaMechal Shabbos Dino Ka'akum, and therefore that teaches us that Shabbos is considered in a league of its own. Kamashmala, and the Gemara says, no, we learn from those psukim v'chai bohem that we assume that one is allowed to be Mechal Shabbos that one has to save their lives even if it means that you will have to be Mechal Shabbos in the course of doing so. So when we talk about Chilul Shabbos for a Chola, there are three very important categories and levels, degrees of Cholim that you have to be aware of. Number one, and the most obvious, is if you have somebody who is in a state of real pikuach nefesh, if you have an immediate and obvious danger. So for example, last year I was in Camp Simcha during the session that they had cancer kids. The assumption is children who are, or adults who are undergoing chemo are considered to be a chola sheyesh bo sakana for almost all intents and purposes. We could assume that they are considered to be somebody that if something goes wrong, they could so quickly and immediately be in a tremendous state of danger, and therefore we assume you're allowed to be mechal Shabbos even on a Balacha D'Araisa, you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for any life-saving activities that might be necessary to take care of such an individual. So much so that the Rishonim say, the Ramban and the Ran, write in Masechah Shabbos, that we assume a person who's in a state of immediate danger and chooses not to be Mechal Shabbos, the Rishonim say, Hareze Chasidus Shel Shtus. That is considered to be a silliness. That's not a chumrah that a person should take upon themselves. That is a big mistake. You don't have a right to volunteer and say, I'm going to keep Shabbos, and if I die, I die. You don't have a right to do that, like the Radvaz writes in his commentary on the Rambam. He says, because the Pasuk says, Hanefashos li heina. Our lives are not in our own hands. The Ribono Shel Olam is the one who created us. He wants us all to live. He gave us the rules. He dictated to us when we're supposed to violate the rules, when we're supposed to keep the rules, and therefore we assume anybody who chooses not to violate Shabbos, the Rishonim say, is considered a Chasidus Shel Shtus. So I remember there was a woman, a man who came into shul and wanted to name his baby. And we asked, when was the baby born? He said, today. It was Shabbos afternoon. So I said, how did you get back from the hospital? He said, we didn't go into the hospital. We had the baby at home. I said, what are you, crazy? You had the baby at home? He said, why wouldn't we have the baby at home? It's Shabbos. Why would we go to a hospital? So I said, not only are we not going to give you an aliyah by mincha to name the child, I would say we should throw you out of shul, and if you don't take an ambulance to the hospital, I'll drive you to the hospital. That is not a chumrah that a person should take upon themselves. Not a good idea. A woman who is in labor, a woman who is in active labor and having a child is obviously considered to be a chole sheyesh bo sakana. Mirtz Hashem, those in the room who are not yet married, you'll have that opportunity to be involved with a woman who is in labor, and at that point, it's not something you should play games with. It's something we assume is an absolute pikuach nefesh, either for the mother or for the child or for both sometimes. And this is something that one has to absolutely violate the laws of Shabbos to take care of. The second category that we speak about is what the Pischei Tshuva quotes in the name of the Chasam Sofer, and that is, once in a while you have a suffix sakana, once in a while you have a situation where maybe there will be some danger that will come about from the situation, but he says, it's echad minei elef alfei alafim. It's something that is so unlikely, it's so improbable that a real suffix sakana, that a real sakana is going to come about from the issue that we face. So the Chasam Sofer discusses such a case, and we assume you don't really have a right to violate the laws of Shabbos for that. So for example, you have somebody who has an ingrown toenail. I've been told by doctors once in every couple of years, it's true if you have certain kinds of medical conditions, even if you have an ingrown toenail, it can turn into a massive infection and it can end up killing the person. Maybe. But if it was a regular day of the week, I would imagine most of us who would have an ingrown toenail would say, I'm not going to stay home from work for this. I'll take care of it whenever I have a chance to take care of it. So if that's the case, then we don't have a right just because it happens to be Shabbos and we happen to be home, and therefore we have nothing else to do, so we may as well go to the hospital to take care of it. That is not a valid reason to violate the laws of Shabbos. We would assume that when it's echad minei elef alfei alafim, it's true. Once in a blue moon, it does blow up into a major infection and something could happen. But in the normal course of events, we would assume if you don't have a pre-existing condition, and there's no reason for you to assume that there's something really wrong here, we would assume that that is something that could wait till after Shabbos, and therefore we would tell you Shabbos is not allowed to be violated for that. Third category is, what if you have a person where they have a situation in front of them that can really go either way? Some people would be concerned about this, and other people who maybe have a little bit more medical expertise would say, yeah, I think it could wait. So if you have a situation like that, my father writes in the name of Reb Chaim Ozer, in the name of other Gedolim, the Chafetz Chaim said the same thing, that we have a right to say it depends on the person. If you feel you're the type of person that when you have this reasonable kind of condition that's somewhere in the middle and you don't know exactly where it's headed, and you feel that in order to take care of it, you need to go to the hospital, so you would have a right to be Mechal Shabbos if you felt concerned about it. And for the other person who maybe is not concerned at all, they're making an educated decision. Just some people would be and some people wouldn't be. So we have a right to assume each person can decide on their own. And the one who chooses not to go to the hospital under those conditions, we apply the principle of Shomer Psayim Hashem. Shomer Psayim Hashem is often misunderstood. It doesn't mean God looks after the people who are fools. It doesn't mean you jump off a bridge and you say, Shomer Psayim Hashem, look, no hands, the way my father says it. That's not Shomer Psayim Hashem. We don't assume that God's going to look after you if you do something foolish. Shomer Psayim Hashem means, and this is something that's developed based on many sources, that Shomer Psayim Hashem really means when you have a situation where it's not so clear that there's an immediate danger. And a person has the right to assume, that's really what the Gemara Nivamas is describing, a person has the right to assume in a situation like that, okay, I don't have to always err on the side of caution, I have the right to say, Shomer Psayim Hashem, and I have the right to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of me under those circumstances. Now, how far would we allow ourselves to be Mechal Shabbos for that first category? For somebody who is a real life-threatening illness, for somebody who is really sick, somebody who is clearly a chola sheyesh bo sakana, how far would we allow ourselves to go in order to take care of such a person? And this is something you'll say to yourself, not such a relevant question, doesn't happen so often. I can tell you, it happens every single Shabbos in Camp Simcha when I was there. It happens in every hospital. This is something, if you're dealing with a real acute chola, this is something that will happen, and it's something that happens all the time. So the Gemara discusses the following scenario. The Gemara says in Masechah Shabbos, we can all learn it together, Tana Rabbanan, Emaisat Sricha Lener, if you have a woman who is in labor, you have a woman who's giving birth, and she needs the lights turned on in the room in order to assist her to have the baby. Chavroseh Madlekes La Esaner, it says that the women who are in the room helping her out to have the baby, the midwives, they are allowed to turn the lights on for her. Says the Gemara Pshita. Of course you're allowed to turn the lights on. How are you going to know how to operate? How are you going to know how to catch the baby? How are you going to know how to do anything? Obviously, you have to turn the lights on. So you don't need a Gemara to teach you that halacha. Same way you're allowed to administer medication. You're allowed to do everything else on Shabbos if it's for a chodesh she'yesh b'sakana. So you also would be allowed to turn the lights on if that's what the scenario called for. So answers the Gemara, what we're referring to here is a suma. We're referring to a woman who's blind. So she can't really see what's going on anyway. We, as the medical professionals, have it totally under control. But the woman who's blind is nervous, and she says, turn the lights on, I think there's not enough light in here. And we keep telling her, it's fine, you're going to be all right, there's no problem, we can see everything. So in that case, says the Gemara, ma'u detema kivin delachazia. You might think that since the patient herself is not able to actually see, you would say that it's usur, because it's really not affecting the patient herself. Kamash malan, says the Gemara, isuva miyasva daita. Since it will calm her down, since it will soothe her in some way and it will make her feel a little bit more relaxed, therefore we would allow it, even though it means violating a malacha de'araisa. Ask the Magen Avraham, I don't understand. Yisuva daita? Why are you telling me it's because of yisuva daita? Why are you saying it's in order to calm her down, therefore we're allowed to turn the lights on? What about the fact, says the Magen Avraham, that we need it in order to see what we're doing? So of course we're supposed to do it. And the Magen Avraham writes, which is clearly the understanding of the Gemara, that what we mean here is we have medical experts who know exactly what they're doing and who have enough sunlight from outside. There's not going to be any problem with the lights off. But this woman is screaming on the bed and saying, if you don't turn the lights on, something's going to go wrong, even though it's not really true. But it will just make her feel more relaxed, even though medically it makes absolutely no difference at all. In such a case as well, we would assume that would be permissible. We would be allowed to turn the lights on, even though it would mean violating a malacha de'araisa in doing so. This comes up every single Shabbos when you deal with a chola. For example, you have a person who's a chola, and they happen to be in the infirmary, let's say in camp. So we have children who come in, and they're in the infirmary with real life-threatening problems. They have real issues that we need to deal with in the infirmary. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in the infirmary. Everyone in camp is sick. So if you're in the infirmary, it means you're really sick. You have a real problem. So if you have a situation like that, and the child is laying in the bed the whole Shabbos, and they want to know whether or not we can turn on the TVs for them, or we can turn on a video game for them, and they want the lights on, they want the lights off, they want something that seems to have absolutely nothing at all to do with the medical care of the patient themselves. It's just diverting their attention, it's relaxing them a little bit. Or, for example, very often you have a chola who's going to ask you, if they're on one of those hospital beds, they'll ask you to put the bed up, put the bed down, which means you have to press buttons and do all kinds of malachas. Are you allowed to do that or not? Well, it depends what kind of chola you're dealing with. And certainly, if you're dealing with a chola she'yesh bo sakana, it would seem from the way the Magen Avraham interprets that Gemara, the Mishneh Berurah agrees to this assumption, that we would assume even a malacha de'araisa would be permissible for the sake of a chola she'yesh bo sakana, even when it's not directly related to the medical condition of the chola at all. Meaning, I'm not administering medication, I'm not doing a surgery, all I'm doing is turning on a video game. Now it has to be within reason. So let's say a woman on her way to the hospital says, I'll be much more comfortable if on our way to the hospital we make a stop and we pick up this one and we go and pick up that one. Happens to be it's Friday night. You're not supposed to be driving around the whole neighborhood and picking everybody up and getting everyone to be involved in the Chil Shabbos. So it's true. If it happens to be a person who's very closely related to the situation and it's really going to help the woman calm herself down, so that's one thing. But stam to make a joke out of it and go traveling around to pick everyone up, one has to use their careful discretion to know exactly what's permissible and what perhaps would not. The Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa writes in the name of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach as well, that even if we're talking about a situation where all you're doing is minimizing pain on Shabbos, that would also be permissible. Because he says that minimizing pain is also sometimes a contributing factor to sakanas nefashos. So for example, he says, a chola asked that they want you to administer morphine. So how are you allowed to administer morphine? It's Shabbos. How are you allowed to administer something that's clearly made only to manage the pain that the chola has? The answer is, if the chola is going to be in such intense pain, sometimes the condition can worsen as a result, emotionally. And as a result of that emotional trauma that they're going through from not being tended to, perhaps that will lead to something far worse. And therefore we would assume, he says, that would be permissible. So for example, once again going back to the case of a woman who's in labor. So they have something, you'll learn about it someday as well. It's referred to as an epidural. An epidural is a very scary looking shot. They even make the husband go out of the room for that because it's pretty scary. So they have this big shot that they put into the woman's back, and that is supposed to be able to minimize, it numbs basically the area, and it minimizes, doesn't totally take away, but it minimizes the pain of the process of giving birth. So would one be allowed to administer an epidural on Shabbos, or perhaps no? Well, it's not a pikuach nefesh if a woman doesn't have, many women have had children without an epidural. Let's say you come to the hospital too late and the baby's already on its way out, so you have the baby without the epidural. Or many women choose not to have it. There are many risks involved and not everybody wants it. So it's certainly possible to have a healthy child without an epidural. That's not an issue at all. But yet, if a woman says, this is what I want in order to be able to have the baby the way I'd like to have the child, so we assume we have every right to listen to her and we have a right to administer that epidural on Shabbos, even if it means violating a malacha in doing so. Because that is certainly a case of Yisuva Daita. I remember a number of years ago, I was with my father on a Friday afternoon at home. It was before I was married, so it was at least 9 years ago. And it was an amazingly painful shaila, but I remember the shaila came in Friday afternoon. So we were already getting ready for Shabbos, and unfortunately there was a young boy. He was in like 15, 16 years old. He was in yeshiva in New York somewhere in a dorm. And he had some sort of severely acute medical emergency on Friday afternoon. He had no pre-existing condition at all. And he was rushed to the hospital in NYU, and they felt that perhaps he might not make it through Shabbos. It wasn't clear exactly what was going to happen. I don't know if he had a heart attack. I don't remember exactly what happened, but it was a very serious condition. By the time he woke up and got back to himself, he was still in a very severe medical emergency, and he was in the hospital, and he called his parents who lived in Canada to let them know that he was awake and he was able to speak on the phone. And the first thing that he said to his parents is, please come immediately, I'd like you to come stay with me in the hospital. And it was probably an hour before Shabbos. So the parents immediately called my father and asked him, what are we supposed to do? Obviously, getting to the hospital in New York is either going to mean that we're going to jump on a flight on Friday night, or it means perhaps that we're going to have to drive in our cars 7-8 hours on Shabbos in order to get there. And the question was whether or not they have a right to do that. And my father thought it was a davar pashut. He thought it wasn't even a shaila, that the parents had every right. He said, when you have a 15, 16-year-old boy who's going through an emergency like that and who we don't even know what's going to be with him, my father thought that it wasn't even a question that we have a right to tell those parents that they can be Mechala Shabbos, even on a Malacha D'Araisa, to come from Canada, however they're going to get here, and make their way over to the hospital as quickly as they can and not be concerned at all about the laws of Shabbos. I remember about 2 years ago, unfortunately, many in the room know that Rav Asher Weiss's wife just passed away. The Shloshim was a few weeks ago. So he spent a couple of rounds of treatments in Sloan Kettering Hospital here, and whenever he was here, we spent a lot of time in the hospital together. So I remember 2 years ago when he was here with his wife. So I was in Sloan with him, and it was very interesting, the shaila that came up. He was there the entire week, and unfortunately, his wife's condition became very serious at one point, and she ended up in the ICU, and she was on oxygen, and it was a very difficult situation. So she was in the ICU all week, and she was communicating by texting on her phone. So whenever she wanted to say something to her husband or to the children, so she texted. But then, Friday afternoon, I was there. I dropped off food for Shabbos, and we came. And he said to me, Shai, I have a problem, because my wife all week was texting on her phone in order to communicate with her, and I don't think it's reasonable to tell a person in this kind of condition that they should go 24 hours of Shabbos without communicating. That's unreasonable. So what should I do? So he said that he had never thought of the issue before because he never had a close family member who was in the hospital. And he made a comment to me at the time, which I think is just in general an interesting point. He said, as a posek or as a rav, sometimes you have to think about situations as if it was your own family member. He said, if somebody would have called me up just on a regular week in the year and said, I have a family member's in the hospital, they're on oxygen and they need a heter, what should they do about communicating? You would say, all right, so they'll go with Shabbos and they won't communicate. But he said, when you see it's your own family member and you see how painful it is for them to even think of the possibility that 24 hours of Shabbos, they're just not going to have any mode of communication at all with the outside world, that's something that could be a very painful experience. And you have to really consider, as a person who answers a shaila, you have to really consider very carefully what is going to be the fallout if I am not going to be able to come up with a heter, if I'm not going to figure out the situation and really understand what the chola is dealing with, what is going to happen as a result. So I remember there were a lot of frum doctors there in Sloan Kettering at the time, And one of the doctors happened to come down just for just to see what was doing. So he showed up. I think he was the head of the ICU. I don't remember exactly, but he showed up. And Rav Asher said, before you go and check on my wife, he says, what should we do? We have to figure out what to do. What do the other patients do? He said, tell you the truth, I've never had this question. No patient ever asked me the question. They do whatever they do. So he said, well, maybe other people do that, but we would like to do the right thing. So let's try and figure this out. So the doctor said, give me a few minutes. He goes downstairs. And unfortunately, they have a big children's ward in Sloan Kettering. So he goes downstairs and he brings up an Etch-a-Sketch. You know, one of those little children's toys where it has the little sketches on it. So he brings it up. He says, give it to your wife. Let's see. Maybe she can write with this. So he says, great idea. He gives it to his wife. And she, you know, she was so weak. But even without being weak, you know, until you get one letter and it really is legible, it's impossible. So she tried it and it took her like, you know, 15, 20 minutes to get one word out. So he said, okay, this is not going to work. So he nicks that idea. Then he says, okay, what else are we going to do? The doctor went back downstairs and he says he has another idea. He comes back up with a magnetic toy that they have for children as well, where like you pick up a magnet, you move it around with a pen, and with that you can write some letters just with magnets. It's not really Ksiva at all. So he brought it back up. His wife tried it out. Also, didn't really do the trick, because until you get a letter out with that thing and until people can understand what you mean, it wasn't possible. So then he said to me, Shai, do me a favor. I want you to go out to the store and buy a whiteboard. Now, this was a big chiddush. He said, go out and buy a whiteboard. I said, what does a whiteboard help? So he said, if you buy a whiteboard and you use those markers, so he said, that's considered a ksiva she'ena shel kayama. So that was a big chiddush. That's considered a ksiva she'ena shel kayama, which means that it's omed limachek, he said. The only malacha on Shabbos of ksiva is when you have something that's being written that is supposed to be a permanent writing. That's really the malacha of ksiva. What about a situation where you have something that's omed limachek? So that's only a malacha derabbanan. So he thought, omed limachek doesn't just mean that it's going to disintegrate, it's going to disappear, but omed limachek means when you write on a whiteboard, the nature of writing on such a board is someone's going to come right after you and wipe it away. So that means, he thought, that's a ksiva she'ena shel kayama. So that's what we did. We went out and bought the whiteboard with the markers, all different colors, and she used that on Shabbos. I thought it was a big chiddush, but it was a very interesting one nonetheless. I told it to my father afterward. He thought it was what to think about. He didn't think it was right. He didn't think it was wrong. He just, he considered it. And it was just a very interesting psak. But the reason why there's what to even talk about in the first place is because obviously, this has nothing directly to do with the medical intervention. Obviously, you're not giving medication, you're not doing a surgery, but you're allowed to violate perhaps a malacha, even if it means that it's not directly related to the medical condition itself, because we assume that that would be something that would help the chola in an emotional state. And if they're a chola sheyesh basakana, we assume that emotional stability is something that is very important as well. I have another example of something that came up this year in Camp Simcha, and I was happy that I remember Rav Asher Weiss has a tshuva about this as well. I never thought it would happen in my lifetime, but it did. It was an interesting story. So he has the story about an older man who was in the hospital in the ICU. He was a Holocaust survivor, and he was, I think, a 96-year-old man. And the doctor said that Yom Kippur, he absolutely was not allowed to eat. He wasn't allowed to fast. Otherwise, it would be a tremendous sakana to his health. He can die from that. So the children knew that their father wasn't going to take that for an answer. So what the plan that they came up with was, the doctors told them, you should all come and visit the father like you normally would on a regular day of the week, and there's no reason to change the routine at all, and everybody should come in their weekday clothing, so that this way the father has no idea that it's Yom Kippur, and we'll feed him like normal. So that's what happened. The children show up on Yom Kippur in their normal weekday clothing, and they didn't say anything about the fact that today was Yom Kippur. And they told the father, "No, there's food in the room, why don't you eat?" So the father said to them, "What do you mean, it's Yom Kippur today?" So he said, "It's not Yom Kippur. Do you think we would ever dress like this if it was Yom Kippur? How could we ever show up to a hospital on Yom Kippur? How would we get here? We don't have a right to drive on Yom Kippur." So the father said, "Yeah, you think I'm already an old man? Let me tell you something. If you guys really believe that it's not Yom Kippur, if you eat the sandwich, then I'll eat the sandwich." So the shaila was, are you allowed to do such a thing when it's clear that my eating the sandwich is not really contributing to his medical condition? He decided that he's going to be a wise guy and tell me, if you eat the sandwich, then I'll eat the sandwich. So it's not really my pikuach nefesh, it has to do with him. But perhaps that's something that we have to consider for pikuach nefesh as well. So this summer in Camp Simcha, I thought it was interesting. We had the exact same question. So Shabbos Batamas was on a Sunday, And we told many, many of the campers that they shouldn't fast, and we told many of the staff members as well that they also shouldn't fast, because my father was actually there for that Shabbos. I brought him up for Shabbos because there was a lot to deal with there. So he said over Shabbos as well that he thought many of the staff members should not fast because they have to push wheelchairs up the hills and they have to do all kinds of things during the day, and he thought that it was important that they are healthy and well enough to do it. So the councils decided on their own if they're healthy enough, if their camper is sick enough, do they need so much intervention during the day, do they need so much help. So this is something that was being discussed back and forth between each of the counselors and staff members to figure out who's going to fast and who's not. But anyway, what we said for many, many of the campers was that they absolutely should not fast. They weren't well enough to do that. So one of the campers is a Chassidish girl, and she came over to me on Shabbos HaBetamuz, and she was very upset. She said, my counselor is telling me it's a Nidcha this year, it's only Shabbos HaBetamuz, it's a fast that's only Midrabanan, and I'm a Chola anyway, so I should eat. And she said, I'm very uncomfortable. If my counselor believes that today is just a Nidcha, and it's only Midrabanan, and it's not really so Chamer, and it doesn't really matter, and I'm a Chola anyway, so then you eat. And if my counselor doesn't believe that she has enough justification to eat, then I shouldn't eat either. So it was the same Shaila. It was a little less Chamer because it was Shabbos HaBetamuz instead of Yom Kippur. But we told the counselor, if that's the only way to get the girl to eat, so then you should eat as well. But that's an interesting question, that sometimes you have a situation of a Pikuach Nefesh where it's not directly related to the physical medical condition of the patient themselves, but there's an ancillary issue that we have to deal with that is also going to affect that as well. I mentioned that 2 years ago when I was spending a lot of time in the hospital there, so there was an amazing Shiloh that came up. One day, what was amazing then at the time was, we were sitting, his wife was in the ICU, we were sitting every day for hours in the waiting room in the ICU, and he was just sitting there writing tshuvas, talking through, you know, Shilohs that were coming up. It was just amazing. And then he would ask me, tomorrow, can you bring me this sefer? And it wasn't like, bring me a Gemara. The hospital has a Gemara. It was like, can you bring me, you know, the Tshuvas Chalkas Mechokeg, the this or the whatever it was, like all these esoteric strange things. And that's what he was busy with. That's what he was doing. Just tell you a little anecdote. So after that whole episode was over at the time, he called me one Friday afternoon. He said, Shai, we're getting out. I told him I can't spend another Shabbos in the hospital. I got to get out of here. I said, okay. So he said, can we come to you for Shabbos? I want to come with my wife and the kids for Shabbos. So I said, sure. I was a little nervous because she had just come out of a week in the ICU. I'm like, what happens if something goes wrong in my house? What am I going to do then? I'm not a doctor. So I asked the paramedic if he can please help us out and be, you know, with us the whole Shabbos. So we spent Shabbos together. Friday night in the middle of the meal, we made a private minyan in the house because he didn't want everybody to know that he was here. And we had a private minyan in the house. After that, in the middle of the meal, he says, you know, I'd like to make a siyum in honor of my wife coming out of the hospital. I feel so happy about it. So would it be a tircha to get a minyan together to celebrate the siyum? I said, no problem. So we went around the block, got a couple of people, made a minyan. And he makes a siyum on all of Seder Nashim Bavli in honor of his wife coming out of the hospital. So that was pretty amazing. I'm sitting at the table like this is one of the more amazing moments of my life. And I thought it was pretty interesting. And I'm trying to explain to my wife how amazing it is. You know, if you don't really understand what all of Bavli Nashim is, so it's a little bit hard to explain how amazing an accomplishment it is to do that while your wife is in the hospital in the ICU. Okay, Shabbos morning, same thing, made a minyan in the house. And during the meal, again, he says, okay, you know, I'm so excited that my wife is coming out of the hospital and she's okay, I'd like to make another siyum. So I thought he was just so lost in everything that was going on and he was so worried about her and all the kids were there, there was a lot of noise. So I said, you know, I just want you to know, you made a siyum last night. I don't know if you remember. He says, yeah, I know. So I said, so what's this about? He says, I have something else I'd like to make a siyum on. I said, great. Would it be a tircha to get a minyan together? I said, no problem. So we got a minyan again. And I happened to call my father for that minyan. He was there for Shabbos as well. So we had this minyan together. And he makes a siyum on all of Yerushalmi Nashim in honor of his wife coming out of the hospital. And I said to myself, this is what a person does, you know. There's no more offensive comment to me when people speak to me about my father or people speak about another God. They say, oh, what a genius, what is this? You know what? My father's a smart man. It's true. However, I will tell you, and this is a good lesson for all those who are Yeshiva Bachram here, I will tell you, I have never in my life seen my father without a sefer in his hand. Never. I've never gone anywhere with him. And I remember as children, my father used to be upset at us, like we were little kids. He was upset at us, not to give us mussar, just like he didn't understand it. He was upset. How do you ever go anywhere without a sefer in your hand? Like, what happens if there's a line in the supermarket? What are you going to do then? It wasn't a musar. It was just like, what is a person supposed to do? Like, what do you think you're going to do? I remember we once went to Rabbi Willick's house in Riverdale, and we had to park a few blocks away. So when we were finished, so I told my father, you can wait here. You don't have to walk with us. I said, we'll get the car and we'll pick you up. So we came back and we're looking around, like, where is my father? We left him outside and, like, we couldn't find him. So then my mother says, I know where he is. So she pulls up to the closest lamppost and she says, of course he's there. My father's standing there with his sefer, like, literally like this, holding it up. Because, like, what's he going to do? It took us 5 minutes to go get the car and we left him outside by himself. So what else is a man supposed to do then? So, you know, there's a lot to be learned from this. You can be an Adam Gadol by being a genius, but that's not the way to become an Adam Gadol. The way to become an Adam Gadol is when you finish all of Bavli and Yerushalmi, when you're under tremendous emotional stress, and when a family member of yours is very, very sick, and you don't know what's going to be, that's one nice way to become an Adam Gadol. Another nice way to become an Adam Gadol is if you never, ever go anywhere without a sefer, and you never waste time, it's perhaps another very good example of a person using their time wisely and becoming an Adam Gadol. So one of the shilas that came up then in the hospital, it was a shila that came from Johannesburg. Rabbi Kurtzdag from Johannesburg, I think, called with the shila. Maybe not, but it was someone in Johannesburg called with the shila, and it was a very interesting shila. And I think what was more fascinating than the shila was to watch how, with no svarim there, how an Adam Gadol's mind is able to wander all throughout Shas to figure out how to answer such a question, and where you can pull proofs from to answer the question. So the question was as follows. They have in Johannesburg, somewhere in South Africa, they have a very strong presence of Hatzalah. And Hatzalah there is particularly important, not only because of Hatzalah like we know it here, but Hatzalah there is even more important because apparently if you call regular 911 there, it's really something that is not a good idea at all. And not only that, the much of the Jewish community there apparently does not use the local public hospitals. They use private hospitals because there's all kinds of infections. And therefore, the Hatzalah there is a very important part of the Jewish community. The problem was that the government was passing a new law. And the new law was that in order to be a certified paramedic to serve on Hatzalah, you had to go through a new process. And that process meant that you had to do volunteer rounds in the local hospitals. And you had to do it for a certain period of time. I think it was for 3 weeks at a time or something like that, straight. You had to go every day doing shifts in the hospital in all different machlakot and all different areas of medicine. And only after you did that and went through all the courses and took all the tests, only then did you have a right to become a registered paramedic. So the problem was that what is a person supposed to do if they want to actually become a certified paramedic? All those who were grandfathered in were already paramedics, but all those who now wanted to join Hatzalah would have to go work in a hospital on Shabbos, where there's not a chance that a single Jew will ever be in any of those hospitals on Shabbos. Not a chance. No Jews in the community use those public hospitals. So the question was, how should they deal with this situation? How should they deal with this problem? And it was a very interesting question, because here you have a situation where right now there is no pikuach nefesh. So say, we have all the Hatzalah members that we have already enlisted in the organization, and we have enough. The only question is, 10 years down the line, what's going to be? We're not going to have any new paramedics, so what's going to be then? So we're dealing with a suffix pikuach nefesh 10 years down the line that's not really relevant to this Shabbos right now. So how do you deal with a shaila like that? That's a major issue. That's a major question. So you have to deal with the Noda Yehuda who talks about autopsies. Do you have a right to violate the aveir of nivel ames, of making an autopsy on a cadaver, in order that you should be able to find out some medical research that maybe somewhere down the line is going to help someone? So the famous tshuva of the Noda Yehuda is, you don't have a right to do that unless it's a chola b'faneinu. Let's say you have two people end up in the same hospital with the same symptoms and everything seems the same. One of them dies and one of them stays alive. If you do an autopsy and you find out how to treat the patient who's still alive, that would actually be able to possibly save a life. But says the Noda Yehuda, you're going to do an autopsy and violate the Yisra of Nivel Ames just because potentially, maybe somewhere around down the line, you're going to figure out some medical research that he says you have no heter to violate an Yisra D'oraisa for that, and therefore he says that would not be permissible. So the Chazon Ish and many others said, we extend that today and we say, our whole world is a chola b'faneinu today. Just because there's not another person in this hospital who happens to have the same illness, but there's another person somewhere else who has the same illness that we can be helpful with this information. So he said perhaps there's more room to expand the definition of chole b'faneinu today because of the nature of medicine, because of the nature of communication today, and maybe we should assume that that would be permissible. So the question is, how would you look at a situation like this? If it's not an immediate pikuach nefesh, you can't say a chole is actually going to die right now this Shabbos if I don't do what I'm instructed to do. You never know. Maybe the government will change the law in the next 5 years. Maybe not. Maybe we'll be able to move out of the country and we're not going to have these issues anymore. Maybe all the hospitals are going to be cleaned up, and maybe a lot of maybes, a lot of variables, and you never know exactly how to deal with such a question because it's very hard to define whether or not it's a real pikuach nefesh, or perhaps we should say that it is not considered to be at all. And I remember at the time he brought a proof, he subsequently wrote the whole thing up, but at the time this was in the hospital, and I can tell you this was the first time he was hearing it, and on the spot this is what he was saying. I remember I even brought a minion of YU guys to Davin Mincha that day in Sloan downstairs, and we Davin Mincha, and I said, well, it's Mincha Meir, why don't you say a little Dvar Torah for 10 minutes? So he said, I'll share with you the following. So he shared that Shiloh with everybody that day, and he said, I'm not really sure what to say right now because I haven't really thought about it enough, but let me just give you the rayas off the top of my head that I think are relevant to this case. And he brought a raya from Yeridea, Hilchos Avodah Zarah. He brought a raya from Hilchos Karban Pesach, a Kesef Mishnah somewhere. It was like all over the place to answer the Shiloh that was relevant to Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos. One of the issues that he raised was, the Beis Yosef writes, that if you have somebody who is a karov lamalchus, the Gemara says in Baba Kama, you have somebody who is a Jewish politician, and they're very helpful to the Jewish community to take care of the issues that we're faced with once in a while. So the Gemara says that they have a right to violate the Yisra b'chuko seyem lo seylechu. They have a right to take a certain haircut that was only designated for the non-Jews. They have a right to do it in order to potentially save the Jewish community. So the Beis Yosef asked, we're talking about an Issa d'Araisa b'chuko seyem lo seylechu. How are they allowed to violate an Issa d'Araisa? Because maybe, potentially, down the line, somewhere, they're going to be able to be involved and save somebody's life. How do you know? Right now, they're not saving anyone's life. And the answer that Beis Yosef gives is, we always need good Jewish politicians who have good connections, because without that, you never know. Somewhere down the line, somebody's life is going to be in danger, and the one who we're going to call upon to save his life is going to be this Jewish politician who has good relationships with the government, who knows how to take care of the business that has to be taken care of. And therefore, he says, that would be considered perhaps a situation of pikuach nefesh. So he said maybe that's similar to this case, where you don't have a real pikuach nefesh b'faneinu, but perhaps that wouldn't be necessary in order to determine whether or not we would be allowed to violate the laws of Shabbos. We have the next category, which I really don't want to talk about. I see we only have 6 minutes left, so we'll do it quickly. The next category, after you finish with a chola sheyesh bo sakana, with somebody who's really in a life-threatening illness, is somebody that we refer to as a sakanas aver. You have somebody who one of their limbs is in danger. And the Rishonim discuss whether Sakanas Eiver, you are allowed to be Mechal HaShabbos, only Deraisas, only Derabbanans. A big question, but Bizman HaZeh, in our times we generally assume the Nishmas Avram writes like this, and Rav Shlomo Zalman is quoted as saying Shatz, and many other contemporary Achronim say the same thing, that we assume anyone is in a situation of Sakanas Eiver, we assume that that can so easily spread to the entire body, and it's a real Pikuach Nefesh. So for example, somebody has a broken bone, right? They break their leg on Shabbos. So you'll say, worst comes to worst, we don't get it fixed on Shabbos, so they'll lose a leg. What's the big deal? So they lose a leg. Now, obviously, that is a big deal to lose a leg, but at what cost are we allowed to violate Shabbos for somebody who might lose their leg? And the answer is, we assume that a broken leg can always turn into a major blood clot, and you never know what can turn out from that. So we don't take chances. Whenever it's a sakanas aver, we assume, bismanenu, we generally assume that that's permissible to treat as well on Shabbos and to violate the laws of Shabbos, even by doing an Issa d'Araisa in order to take care of a Sakanas Eiver. The next level of Chola that we need to discuss is someone who we refer to as a Chola She'ein Bo Sakana, a Chola who does not have a life-threatening illness, but the Shulchan Aruch says in Simen Shin Chav Ches, I forgot to put it on here, the Mechaber writes that a Chola who's Nafal Lemishkav, a Chola who is bedridden is considered to be a Chola She'ein Bo Sakana. Meaning, the Rama says, the Rama interprets that din. Listen to the following Rama. Mutar lomer le'enu Yehudi. You're allowed to ask a non-Jew, lasos tavshil lekatan she'en lo malecho. If you have a child who only eats cooked food, let's say, his stomach cannot digest other kinds of food. You have a child who wants to eat the cooked food. You're allowed to ask a non-Jew to go and cook for him. Why? D'stam tzarchei akatan kechola she'ein bo sakana dami. Says the Rama, a tzarchei akatan, when you have the needs of a young child, we can consider that like a chola she'ein bo sakana. And that is very surprising. How exactly do we understand that? Why should we assume that a young child who wants something is suddenly considered a chola she'ein bo sakana? He's not sick at all. So he'll cry a little bit? What's the big deal? And the definition that's given by many contemporary svarim is, a chola she'ein bo sakana means somebody who cannot function in the normal way that they would otherwise function. So therefore we assume somebody who, let's say a child, the Rama says, who normally is supposed to be playing and happy and laughing and doing whatever they do and sucking their pacifier, but instead, because they don't have the food that they really prefer, they're going to be screaming for an hour. That is not the normal way that a child is supposed to act. So we assume they have a right to be considered a chola she'ein bo sakana, and we would allow one to violate an iser d'rabbanan in order to take care of a chola she'ein bo sakana. So Rav Moshe Feinstein is quoted as saying, for example, and my father told me he felt the same way. He felt that this psak was correct, even though he never saw it in print, but he heard it in the name of Rav Moshe, that if you have a couple who's going through fertility issues, and as a result of the issues that they're going through, they have to do some sort of intervention on Shabbos, that sometimes would mean violating an Issur D'Rabbanan, taking shots or all kinds of other things that perhaps might have to be done. So my father thought that that was simple, that we would consider that couple to be a chola she'ein bo sakana. Why? Because they are not able to function normally. If you're going to tell them that we're not going to allow you to take the shots that are necessary or the treatments or whatever it is that you need, even though there's no life-threatening illness here, it's just to enhance their lives, it's to enable them to have children, we would assume that that's considered to be a chola she'ein bo sakana. Now this is a very important issue because the Mechaber goes a little bit further and he says, Hakol cholem eitzel tzina. We assume that if you have a very cold house and we forgot to turn the heat on before Shabbos, the Mechaber says, everybody's considered to be a chola when it comes to being cold. How so? Says the Mechaber, therefore we would allow one to violate the Isser Amir La'akum. You would be allowed to ask a non-Jew, which is an Isser D'Rabbanan, you would be allowed to ask a non-Jew to turn on the heat, because we consider everybody to be a chola when it comes to the house being freezing cold. And the same we assume nowadays is extended in the opposite direction. We've been so accustomed to having air conditioning today, so if you have a burning hot sun, and now the house is boiling, and we forgot to turn on the air for Shabbos, so we would be allowed to ask a non-Jew to turn it on for us, because we assume, the same way the Mechaber says, HaKol Cholim Eitzel Tzina, so do we assume nowadays, HaKol Cholim Eitzel HaChom. Now, I always knew that psak of Shulchan Aruch, but I never really believed that it was true till I saw it with my own eyes last year. What happened? One Wednesday afternoon in camp, we had the electricity went out in the dining room. And the electricians were working on it. They have a generator, but for some reason the air conditioner wasn't able to go on. The lights went back on, and they were trying to figure out how they were going to put in other units, what they were going to do. And I remember there was a girl who was undergoing chemo who passed out in the dining room. She was blue in the face, and it was a tremendous sakana to her, the fact that she was in the dining room for 10, 15 minutes in the burning hot dining room. And I said to myself, this is mamish, it was on a Wednesday afternoon, but this is really what the psak of the Mechaber is. Hakol cholam eitzel tzina. So you say to yourself, really, who's really going to get sick? What's that? So you'll be a little cold, you'll be a little hot. And the answer is, it's not such a joke. It's for real. And we see it can happen by itself. We see it can really happen that a person who doesn't have the right temperature in the room that they happen to be in, it can lead to a tremendous, tremendous sakana, and that is something that would allow us to violate an Isur D'Rabbanan, such as Amir La'akum, in order to take care of it. And this is the reason why they say as well, let's say you have a person who needs a caffeine pill, and without a caffeine pill, they won't be able to function normally. They're going to be drowsy sleeping the whole day. Or you have a person who needs a sleeping pill. They have so much anxiety, they're not able to sleep at night. So we would assume that a person like that is considered to be a chole she'ein bo sakana. Why? There's no life-threatening illness, so you won't sleep through the night. Or you won't be wide awake like you normally are with a caffeine pill. But because we assume that you won't function the normal way that you're supposed to function, that is considered to be a chola she'ein bo sakana. We would allow such a person to take a caffeine pill or a sleeping pill in order to allow them to get their body into the regular routine and to function the normal way that they do. There's so much more to say about all of these issues of taking care of cholam on Shabbos. We only scratched the surface, but for now I see it's already 10 o'clock. We have to daven Maariv. But I hope that none of this should ever be relevant. But should it ever be relevant, at least we should be a little bit educated on our own to know how to react, how to respond to these kinds of situations. And Mr. Shem, we will continue with something else next week.